On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you have a line to Transportation Secretary-designee Craig Thompson. The new state budget would increase transportation revenue by hundreds of millions of dollars, but GOP lawmakers want to do that without the governor's plan to increase the gas tax or bring back gas tax indexing. So join in as we weigh the future of transportation in Wisconsin and how to pay for it. What do you want lawmakers to know as they move through the budget process? What transportation issue needs to be fixed in your community, in your neighborhood? We're at 800-642-1234. Craig Thompson is Secretary Designee of the State Department of Transportation. And prior to that, he served almost a dozen years as the head of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, advocating for all types of transportation-related issues important to its membership. Secretary Thompson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So at a recent WisPolitics event, you called this recently approved transportation budget far more responsible than those you've seen in the recent past. Why is it more responsible?
Well, because it brings in some ongoing, you know, new revenue to pay our bills as we go and relies less on the credit card. So from those two standpoints, it is more responsible than the last, I'd say, five budgets or so, where we pretty much kicked the can down the road and put more on the credit card and put ourselves in a worse situation.
So how are we not kicking the can down the road in this particular transportation budget? What would you call on here that looks promising to you?
Well, again, I still don't think what the governor proposed would have been, you know, much more sustainable and would have gotten us further down the road. But what the legislature has proposed doing is increasing the fees when you transfer your title by $95, and increasing the fee and the registration when you register your vehicle every year by $10. And so by doing that, they'll bring in about $390 some million of ongoing revenue for this biennium. However, that is less than the $608 million that would have been brought in under Governor Evers' proposal.
And as you mentioned, Republicans on Joint Finance, they were not on board with the governor's proposal to increase the gas tax. They rejected it. From your perspective, do you think the gas tax approach is dead as of this at this point, or do you see it reviving anytime soon?
Well, you never know with these things until they're completely over. But the legislature looks like they're looking to vote on the package that came out of Joint Finance soon. So at this point in time, I don't know if it's highly likely that it would change. But I still think it would have been, you know, the better way to move forward. It's what most states around the country have been doing, including a lot of other states in the Midwest and some of the most Republican states across the country. 31 states in the last couple of years have raised their gas tax. Because it is a user fee, and that's traditionally how we funded transportation. The less you drive, the less you pay. The more you drive, the more you pay. And we would in Wisconsin would also be able to have our friends from the Midwest that come here to fish in our lakes and snowmobile and golf come. It would help pay when they filled up at the pump. So we thought it was a much more sustainable way to go about it. But again, the fee approach that the Republicans have proposed would only charge Wisconsinites, but it is ongoing revenue moving forward.
We're talking with Craig Thompson, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Were you encouraged by a proposed gas tax increase from the Evers administration? Or perhaps you're pleased that Republicans on Joint Finance Committee rejected the idea. Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Karen now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'd like to ask the new Secretary of Transportation, how can this administration do a better job of balancing investments among the modes? I'm aging and I rely on the bus service. Young millennials want to be car free because it will help them pay down their college debts. I don't think our current budget is doing a good enough job with that, and I want to see different regions in Wisconsin have the ability to tax them, like regional transportation authorities, to be able to pay for better service locally, and I'd like some comments.
Karen, thanks for the call. Karen is really getting at there are a whole variety of interests when it comes to what transportation looks like, especially when you drill down to a local community. Secretary, how would you respond to that?
No, I think Karen raises some really good points, and I agree with her that we're not doing enough. Specifically, I think she's referring to the area of mass transit historically. And if you look at Wisconsin compared to other states that have major metropolitan areas, basically every state in the country that has, you know, a city the size of Milwaukee or even to Madison, they do allow locals to get together and decide if they want to raise additional revenues for mass transit for their bus system or light rail, whatever it is that they may have. In the governor's budget, we had proposed a 10% increase for mass transit operating assistance, and also to put in $10 million to set up a bus capital replacement program. Unfortunately, what the Joint Finance Committee did was cut that down to a 2% increase and get rid of the program for replacing buses. So, you know, we still have a long way to go.
And under the Republican plan, all counties would be treated the same when it comes to public funding. Given your previous work for the Wisconsin Counties Association, what is your take on that?
Well, you know, I do think the counties as well as the cities and towns are in a very difficult situation in trying to keep up maintaining their systems. So I think the increase that we proposed, which was a 10% across the board increase, and then a smaller increase for the local road improvement program, is certainly helpful, and I think it will move them in the right direction. What the Joint Finance Committee did was also talk about a one-time infusion of $90 million from the general fund into the local road improvement program, and that's something, while needed, it's not sustainable, and it's just kind of a one-time bump. So I think that's something we're really going to have to look at.
Let's go to Kenneth now in Custer. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Why cannot we have a odometer tax and on our tax filing, you know, report the weight of our vehicle and have an odometer tax? Why not?
Kenna, thanks for the call. What about that form of taxation?
So what Kenneth is talking about is something nationally that's been looked at a lot, and there's been states that have piloted Oregon being the leading one, about a mileage-based fee. Some have wanted to do it through GPS. Some you could just report your odometer reading. And the idea being that as we do over the long-term transfer to more electrics, hybrids, or different type of powered cars, that we could still stick with a user fee system. And then it wouldn't matter what you're powering your car with. You would just charge by how many miles you travel. There are administrative hurdles and difficulties to trying to do it, which is why states have been piloting and looking at it. But in this budget, there was language put in the Joint Finance Committee that would have us study that very type of program. And there was $2.5 million put in to study and then come back with recommendations. So I think it is something that we definitely are looking at for the future.
We are talking transportation on this half of the State Capitol Report, and you have a line to Wisconsin DOT Secretary Craig Thompson. Did you see promise in a proposed gas tax increase from the Evers administration, or perhaps you're pleased that Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee rejected a gas tax? How do you feel about raising registration fees straight across the board for Wisconsinites, and what are your thoughts on toll roads? Do you think it should come up as a proposal? Join in the conversation on transportation and how you see it. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute with the secretary here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to fund Wisconsin road projects and where the priorities are at the Department of Transportation. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at the transportation budget situation with State Secretary-Designee Craig Thompson. And earlier this month, the Joint Finance Committee approved increasing fees to help put hundreds of millions of dollars into transportation over the next couple years. So if you were the transportation budget architect, how would you do this? Where would you find new revenue to fix the roads? And what transportation issue needs to be addressed in your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Secretary Thompson stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Jim joining us from Gurnee. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. My comment is really that all of this is really a political issue that is oftentimes played for political means. So the real answer to the transportation funding problem is one of a complex series of moves to increase the funding, which would include all of the variables that could come into play here. For example, yes, it's necessary to increase fuel fees. We haven't done that. We haven't indexed them for decades. That should be done. So I applaud the Evers administration for proposing that sort of thing. But in addition, you know, things are changing in terms of our transportation use. We have lighter vehicles, more fuel efficient vehicles. So perhaps registration fees do need to be increased. Perhaps we need to actually look at how heavy vehicles impact roads, that they should pay for more than the light vehicles. So it's just not a one type of funding addressing the situation. We just got done traveling in northern Ontario, or actually southern Ontario, and the roads were absolutely stellar. As we came back into the United States, where we found the good roads were really the toll roads. So tolls could be another way to do this as well. But to just address it in one means, and just to use the political maneuvers to try to essentially become reelected in the next election and not raise fees, yeah, is not the way to actually address the issue.
Jim, thanks for the call. And Jim is saying that we need to deploy all options that are on the table. Is Wisconsin capable of being able to put all of these options into work, Secretary?
Well, I think Jim raises a lot of good points. And the other part of the budget that we had proposed, in addition to increasing the gas tax and returning indexing, was to increase the fees on heavy trucks by about 27%. But when Jim travels up here from Gurnee, we'd like to have him help us pay, just like what his state, Illinois, just passed a budget where they increased their gas tax 19 cents. Our proposal was much, much less than that. But again, I think I agree we need to look at the other items as well. And the study that's in the budget to look at either tolling to the extent we can right now that we're allowed by Congress, or a more mileage-based fee are all things that I agree we need to look at all the options.
Let's go to Randy in Portage with thoughts on transportation. Hi, Randy.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. The thing that gets me, it's so obvious that the gas tax is the most logical to do. It's the cheapest thing we can do for instant money. If you figure an average car gets 25 miles per gallon, they're going to pay only $96 a year traveling about 20,000 miles. An economy car, maybe $70. A service vehicle like I run, I'm going to pay $300. It's simple. We don't need to create these big infrastructures. And a gas tax also, I live near Wisconsin Dells, of course, and you know, that town increases 10,000, 15,000 people every weekend, and the majority of them are from out of state. Why should the Wisconsin taxpayer have to pay 117% more to register my wood hauler than I have a $500 truck around? Let's have the price of my truck. It just doesn't make sense to me the way the Republicans are using the data that's predicted. In 7 to 10 years, the majority of cars are going to be electrics. I'm in the automotive industry as far as electronics, and it's not going to happen.
Randy, thanks so much for the call. And he brings up a lot of the same things that have been said about a gas tax. But I want to know, Secretary, as you travel the state, has anything surprised you about the state of Wisconsin's roads, good or bad?
Well, you know, I've been going around talking with people in local governments and chambers of commerce, and you know, for over a decade. And so I'm pretty familiar with the fact that, I mean, we've been in a steady state of decline, and the numbers bear it out. And, you know, I think what Randy brings up is exactly what we've been saying. He's right from our standpoint. The increase would have cost, that we propose, would have cost the average driver less than $4 a month more, depending, you know, how much you drive. And the gas tax in the near term is very sustainable. As a matter of fact, it's in place, and it costs us less than 1% administrative costs to collect it. So while I think, you know, for the longer term, over the next decade plus, we do need to investigate, you know, these other ways of moving forward as we transition our vehicles. But right now, there's only less than 3% of the vehicles on the road are electric or hybrid. So I think it is a sustainable way, and it would be the fairest way to really begin fixing these roads.
Secretary, let's take a moment to go inside the DOT. So let's say you have these infusion of dollars for more projects. How soon can you ramp up and get these road projects underway? Is there a lag time?
That's a great question, Kate. And so I've spent a lot of time with our engineers, and the way we constructed the budget was one that we thought was the most feasible to move forward. So where we proposed to spend the bulk of the money, and I'm thankful the Joint Finance Committee kept a lot of these priorities in place, was really to start fixing what we have first. So $320 million of the revenue would go into what we call the State Highway Rehabilitation Program. So that would be going to work on our two-lane highways throughout the entire state, everywhere. And we would begin doing that almost immediately. We have a six-year schedule of projects. We were able to, with this money, move in 111 new and another 100 move up in the queue so that we could begin getting those done earlier in the process. So we believe with this budget, we will be able to start fixing a lot of our two-lane highways in the state.
Let's go back to the phones now with Walt joining us from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Walt.
Hi, good morning, and thank you, Secretary, for being on. I'm going to ask the Secretary to please urge the governor to stick to his guns regarding the gas tax. The earlier caller, Randy, made most of my points, so I won't go over those. But he's absolutely right about the fairness of the gas tax and its effectiveness at getting money from people who actually use roads. In contrast, the registration fee is a negative backwards look because it penalizes people for choosing the most efficient vehicle. Like Randy said, he's got a $500 wood hauler truck and probably a more efficient vehicle for everyday use. So do I. But if I had to choose one or the other, the truck can do everything. The car can't, you know, haul the wood. So I might have to use the least efficient vehicle. As a county highway committee chair, a few years ago, I was at the county highway conference, and I got a chance to ask to please raise your hand of the whole assembly who favors an increase in the gas tax or funding the DOT, and I had a big majority, 70 or 80%, raise their hands, and very few favored the registration fee increase. So that's what my message is today.
Well, thanks for the call. Secretary, as you talk with counties, what concerns them in terms of their roads and their transportation infrastructure?
Well, again, I really appreciate the points Walt made. And I think what concerns the counties is simply, you know, if you look at the amount of miles of roads we have in this state, almost 90% is local, is under local jurisdiction. And, you know, a good part of that is counties. And so with the revenue that they've got coming in right now, both from the property taxes that are able to raise and then the money they get from us at the state for general transportation aids, a lot of them are on a schedule to replace their roads that is, if you just do the math and the amount of resurfacing they're able to do each year, they're on a schedule of over 200 years to replace their roads that are engineered to last, you know, 30 to 40 years. So it's a real concern that they're trying to keep up and do the best they can to keep their roads, you know, drivable. But they're in a significantly difficult situation.
So what does the future hold for tolling? Is it back on the table? Is it not back on the table? Will Wisconsin ever get there?
Well, again, I think it's something that is worth. There was an initial study done in previous budgets, and this study, if it stays in, would allow us to look at, you know, vehicle miles traveled and tolling. The thing is, right now, we would be unable to just go toll our interstates. There is a prohibition on that from the federal government. They do allow tolling of bridges, and they do allow tolling of when you add capacity to toll that additional lane, and there's some other pilots that you can apply for. But we couldn't simply just toll the existing interstate system. So I think it's going to depend upon somewhat if Congress changes some of the rules at the federal level, as well as what the appetite is here as we study it more moving forward.
Really quickly, running out of time, as this budget process continues, what are you hoping for when it comes to making progress on Wisconsin roads?
Well, you know, I think the governor ran on fixing our roads as one of the three main pillars of his election, which he won on. And I think the public fully expects us to do better and begin fixing these roads. So if we're going to stick with these fees, it's a step in the right direction, but we still have a ways to go before we're going to get to the point of really improving all of our roads across the state.
Secretary Thompson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Craig Thompson is the Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Stay with us. The State Capitol Report continues as we look at the ruling from the state Supreme Court on lame duck legislation and consider reaction from lawmakers. That's coming up right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Assembly and the Senate are expected to vote this week on a new budget, and that $82 billion plan passed out of the Joint Finance Committee earlier this month. So before we talk about budget, though, let's look at what happened in the state Supreme Court on Friday. Wisconsin's High Court ruled that a set of laws passed in December were passed legally under our state's constitution. Have you been following how judges are ruling on the lame duck lawsuits? What questions do you have about what is and isn't law here in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So what did we hear out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court on Friday with this lame duck lawsuit?
So this is a lawsuit that we've had our eye on for quite a while. These lawsuits were filed in the early part of this year in response to the December 2018 lame duck session. And essentially what the court ruled on Friday was in favor of Republican lawmakers and in favor of this lame duck session. This particular lawsuit, there are four related to the lame duck session, is a procedural argument. It's going after lawmakers' ability to actually call themselves into session in what's called an extraordinary session, and that's what they did for the lame duck. The lawsuit contended that that power to call themselves into an extraordinary session isn't explicitly outlined in the state constitution, and because that power isn't given to them within the constitution, therefore them acting on it was unconstitutional, and then the session itself should be completely null and void. What the court found, it rejected that argument in a 4-3 decision. It split along the ideological lines of the court. There are four conservative-aligned justices and three liberal-backed justices. And the court essentially said, this is actually from the majority opinion, which was written by Justice Rebecca Bradley. She said the Wisconsin Constitution itself affords the legislature absolute discretion to determine the rules of its own proceedings. Mm. So in her decision, which, you know, she writes on behalf of the majority, she cited different parts of the Constitution that say the legislature has power to make rules. Those rules might not be laws, but they have the force of law in terms of things like this extraordinary session.
So what did the three dissenting justices claim?
So the three dissenting justices were Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, Shirley Abrahamson, and Rebecca Dallet. And they essentially said that the majority opinion, they used this phrase a couple times, subverts the Wisconsin Constitution. They said that there is that one part of the Constitution that you can read as lawmakers create these rules, and those rules allow them to call the extraordinary session. But it also says there is a section that requires them to have rules for proceedings. And so I'll just read from, I'm not phrasing it very well. So I'll just read from their decision. This is the minority. This is the dissenting opinion. It says the legislature's ability to determine the rules of the proceedings pursuant to one article does not swallow up the meeting requirements of another article or allow it to wield unbridled power.
Wow, it's striking that they can interpret the Constitution in starkly different ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is what you see in a lot of these court decisions, and very powerful wording. Obviously, this is a very contentious area. A lot of feelings have been involved in this. It's a high-powered issue, I think. Lots of momentum on each side.
How did the governor respond to this news?
So the governor was obviously not pleased. He's been opposed to the lame duck session, of course. The lame duck session was put in place to limit a number of the governor's powers, right? That was kind of a big part of the lame duck session. So his statement that he released very shortly after this went public was, today's decision is disappointing and unfortunately all too predictable. He said it is based on a desired political outcome, not the plain meaning and text of the Constitution.
Hmm. So is this the end of the road then for this particular lawsuit?
It is for this particular lawsuit because this is a state level lawsuit, a state based lawsuit, and the state Supreme Court is the highest judicial power in the land. There's no way to appeal this. There's no way to take it anywhere else. So I feel like this doesn't happen to us very often as we cover lawsuits in the state of Wisconsin,
right.
But we're often saying, you know, there's an appeal, there's someplace else it could go. Not in this case.
But does this ruling at all impact, influence these other suits that are in the background here?
Yeah, so I think it's not explicitly, because of course they are all separate cases, right? Separate arguments. But there is one other state level lame duck lawsuit. This one is based on the laws that were passed within the lame duck lawsuit rather than kind of the procedural grounds that I outlined before. But it is sitting before the state Supreme Court now. And I think some people are sort of reading the tea leaves of how the court ruled on this case as a possible indication of how they might rule on that other case. So that's kind of to be determined, of course. But I think whenever we have kind of high stakes things like this, people try to look and see and try to anticipate.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She's getting us up to speed on what's happening inside the Capitol. You can join in with your questions, your perspectives. Do you think the lame duck legislation should be left as is, or should it be struck down? How much power do you think Wisconsin's executive branch should have? And do you agree it should be scaled back? We're at 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts to ideas@wpr.org. So with this ruling on Friday, what have GOP leaders in state government said about this ruling, and what was their response like?
So, of course, GOP leaders have been very defensive of the lame duck session from day one. They, back when it was being called, when it was so controversial, you know, there were protests at the Capitol, a lot of folks showing up saying this shouldn't be something lawmakers should do in advance of a new sort of regime being sworn in the Capitol. And this is, of course, things we've seen in other parts of the country. They said that they had the power to do that, that they were elected officials at the time, they were elected to serve a certain term, and that they were completely within their right to do that. So the statement that they released on Friday was pretty consistent with that argument. They said this was a joint statement that was issued from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And they said, quote, the court upheld a previously non-controversial legislative practice used by both parties for decades. So this is an argument.
Is that true? Has it been used by both parties for decades?
Yes. This is something, these extraordinary sessions that were in question in particular in this lawsuit, which I think we should mention since we're so far down in the weeds anyway, that there are extraordinary sessions, yes. And then there are special sessions. The governor calls special sessions. The legislature calls extraordinary sessions. Special sessions have a longer history. These extraordinary sessions, I believe the first ones were in the 80s.
So what is the timeline on these other few lawsuits that are going on regarding the lame duck laws? And when will we see those play out in court?
So as I mentioned, we have that other state level lawsuit that's currently sitting before the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. They haven't heard oral arguments in that case yet. So we're expecting that to happen. And then the ruling there. So we're getting kind of close to the end of that one. And then we have two federal lawsuits, one of which is a little bit complicated. So one of the federal lawsuits that has to do with lame duck is actually kind of a branch off of a previous federal lawsuit that had to do with Wisconsin's voter ID law and some other election related laws. That lawsuit itself was filed in 2016, and then these lame duck elements were sort of tacked on earlier this year, saying we believe that these lame duck provisions that have to do with early voting and some little procedural changes to voter ID fall under the umbrella of this particular lawsuit. So when that motion was filed, interestingly, they asked the judge in this federal case that's been going for a couple years, could you block these lame duck laws? Because we believe that they're in violation of a previous ruling that you've made in this federal case, this two-year-old federal case. The judge agreed to do so. And so those voting restrictions, which would limit voting to early voting to 14 days in Wisconsin, and then some of those kind of procedural changes with voter ID, they have to do with if you don't have a driver's license to present when you vote, the sort of process you have to go through to get a valid ID for voting. Those are currently blocked. Those laws can't be enforced in Wisconsin because of that federal decision. And they're among kind of the only laws actually that were passed during the lame duck session that aren't being enforced right now because of this federal case. And then there's one other federal case that's very early in the process. It's just been filed. So we have a lot ahead of us in that second federal case.
So that was just in that previous one, that was just literally a motion added, tacked on to another case saying, hey, this isn't right. You've ruled in the past a certain way. So therefore, make these lame duck laws null and void.
Exactly. Exactly. It was sort of the plaintiffs in that case, which is One Wisconsin Institute. It's a liberal advocacy group. They said, we believe these new laws are in violation of something that you ruled against quite a while ago. So let's just all loop this together. And the judge in that case agreed. Now, that was a district judge in the federal court. Now, that case is really interestingly, has been sitting for quite a while before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal appellate court in Chicago. They heard arguments in that case in 2017, I believe.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So the amount of time that's passed between arguments and ruling is very unusual. And I haven't heard personally that we're expecting a decision in that anytime soon, but it could certainly happen anytime.
Talking with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White. She's our guide with the latest developments, play-by-play from lawmakers as they work through the budget process, helping us understand the complex lame duck lawsuits out there. And your concerns as well at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned the lame duck session is polarizing and distracting from the actual governing going on? What confuses you about these lawsuits? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute for more State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. We're getting up to speed on the developments from inside the Capitol in this edition of the State Capitol Report. Watching lawmakers inch closer on a two-year state budget deal, State Senator Dewey Strobel, along with several of his Republican colleagues, they held up passage of the last budget for several months in 2017. But this time around, Strobel is a yes, and he was a member of the budget committee this year. He voted to advance the budget out of committee earlier this month.
Because I think it represents a good blend of what we stand for and what the governor should sign.
So what do you make of Republicans stripping out many of Governor Evers' top priorities? What specific funding are you following through the budget process, and how does it affect your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Laurel White stays with us. She is WPR State Capitol reporter. Laurel, before we move on to the budget, we're really waiting in limbo here on these lame duck lawsuits. The legislation that passed during the lame duck session, what is the law of the land and what isn't? Mm-hmm. And is this more complicated than we think?
Yes, always complicated. But essentially, for folks that need a little bit of a refresher of the laws that were passed during the lame duck session, they sort of broadly limited the powers of the governor and the attorney general. So some of those things were limiting the governor's ability to direct the withdrawal of the state from federal lawsuits, like the lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act, limits the governor's ability to change some laws through administrative executive action, like the voter ID law. There had been some speculation he might be able to make some changes. Limits the governor's power to appoint people to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation Board. That's the board that's overseeing the Foxconn contract. In terms of the attorney general, it gives lawmakers power to sort of go outside the attorney general's office for defense of laws that they pass. So those are some of the things that were passed during the lame duck session, in addition to those limits on early voting that I talked about before. With the exception of the early voting limits, and this rather wonky provision that requires state departments to post public documents for a public comment period, everything has been allowed to go into effect. So all of those things that I outlined with the governor, the element about the attorney general representing lawmakers or lawmakers being able to go around him, all of those things are in place right now as these cases move forward.
And so if the governor would receive a favorable ruling on any one of these cases, would that open up the window for him to make some, you know, move quickly on some, on certain things?
Yes, that's exactly right. And we have actually seen that happen. In the first lame duck case, actually the one that the Supreme Court ruled on Friday, there was a little bit of window of time between when a Dane County judge struck down all of the lame duck laws and an appeals court put a stay on that ruling, that the governor was able to take some action. You might remember there was a little bit of drama about some appointments that Governor Walker made before he left office. Governor Evers withdrew those appointments, reappointed a number of individuals, but left some spots vacant. That's kind of what happened in a little bit of a limbo period there. Also, the governor and attorney general were actually able to, within that window, withdraw Wisconsin from the Affordable Care Act lawsuit. So Wisconsin is not in that lawsuit anymore, though that law is back in place.
Let's go to the phones now with Pat in Kenosha. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is that when we voted Governor Evers in, we voted for him to have the powers that he had before the lame duck session. That they're changing what we had voted for and negating some of the voters'
intentions
in the election.
Yeah. So Pat's saying, you know, we went to the ballot box in November. The lame duck session happened in December. And so that doesn't seem to speak to what the voters voted for.
That's what a lot of people who have expressed concerns about the lame duck session have articulated in the months since, that it was sort of a violation of the democratic process because voters chose the governor to take office in January, believing that he would have certain powers, the same powers that Governor Walker had when he was in office, for example. And he doesn't have a number of those powers because of these lame duck laws. Interestingly, I think that that argument is best exemplified in the second of the two federal cases, which is the case brought by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. That's the one that's very early in the process. And it says that the lame duck session violated the guarantee clause of the U.S. Constitution, which essentially says that individuals are guaranteed a Republican form of government, a representative form of government. And folks are saying that, you know, the governor was elected to do certain things and he's not able to do those things.
Well, let's move on to the budget. Joint Finance Committee recently finished its long budgeting process. You've been moving through with a fine-tooth comb on what went down there. Now some important votes this week in the Assembly and the Senate on this budget. What are you watching for and what's going to happen this week?
So we're really down to the final stages of the budget process this week. This is where the rubber really rubber meets the road. The Senate and the Assembly are scheduled to vote on the final budget proposal that lawmakers have crafted over the course of the past several weeks. The Assembly is expected to vote tomorrow. Generally, this is the kind of thing that goes late into the night or early into the next morning. Lawmakers have said not to expect that this time. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out on Tuesday, kind of how quickly they wrap that up and how much debate there is.
Does that mean they're all on the same page?
Well,
or what does that mean?
It's an interesting thing. Yeah, I think, you know, we saw a lot of conflict between the majority party during the last budget, sort of fighting amongst Republicans about specific things. I think what we've seen with this budget is that Republicans that still control the legislature are much more on the same page, kind of united in their opposition of the ideas of the governor. And I think that's made things a little bit quicker this time to kind of move along because there are fewer disagreements. Though that is kind of an interesting segue into what we've seen in the Senate over the past week or so, where there is some disagreement between Republican lawmakers. The Senate is expected to vote on the budget on Wednesday. And really kind of all eyes are on the Senate at this point because the margin for the bill to pass the Senate is much tighter than it is in the Assembly. Republican lawmakers can only lose two votes if they want to pass the budget out of the Senate with only Republican support.
And we've seen Senators Steve Nossen and David Craig opposed to the Joint Finance Committee's version of the budget. What is this opposition looking like in the Senate?
So essentially what Senators Craig and Noss are saying is that the budget is too big, it's too expensive, it places too much of a burden on Wisconsin taxpayers. This is a concern that they've been pretty consistent in voicing. They were two of the four senators that were concerned about the last budget, the Walker budget. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was actually asked about some of the kind of the Senate conflict last week as an outside observer from the Assembly. And he said, you know, I wasn't incredibly surprised that Senator Craig opposed the budget this year, because he said if he's not going to vote for a budget from Governor Walker, he's not going to vote for a budget from Governor Evers. So what we're really keeping an eye on this week is, as I mentioned, Republicans can only lose those two votes, and they've already lost two votes. So if another Republican senator decides that he has concerns with the budget enough to not approve it this week, that could really lead to a stalled process. They're going to have to kind of go back to the negotiating table, figure out how they can build consensus around this enough to get it to Governor Evers' desk.
As we wrap up here, I was listening to an interview with Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz, who said, look, this budget is so much different than what would have been under a Republican-controlled administration. Is this budget that different? I mean, because we saw so many of Evers' proposals just wiped off the map.
This is a very different budget than what Governor Evers proposed. But I think over the past week, Democrats have been framing it as a budget that moves a little bit closer to what they want than they have had in the past. They said that Governor Evers proposing the budget that he did has sort of moved the needle within the Republican-controlled legislature, sort of pushing Republican lawmakers to do a little bit more than they might be comfortable with, go a little bit outside of their comfort zone. And Democrats have said they're pleased with that, at least.
Laurel, thanks for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Just ahead, we look at the behaviors of honeybees and their survival strategies. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.